Welcome to Fitbit Tie with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. We want to thank you for joining us this Sunday afternoon. Got a great show lined up for you, and one that we've been interested in, very timely, something that we've been interested in talking about for a couple of weeks with spring getting here, a little warmer weather, summer coming up on us.
Most definitely. I mean, I think, and probably once we get our guest on, I'll share a little story of a close call I had myself, shocker, when it comes to this particular topic. So,
really?
I'll have a good anecdote to go with our topic at hand, but wow. I'll wait for you guys to tease me later, so I'll leave it on a cliffhanger, but how's your week been going?
It's been going good. Crazy busy as usual. Mm-hmm. You know, everything over at the rec center is just cruising along, but a lot of people in and out of there, and with the construction going on with
sure.
the new addition onto the facility for wheelchair athletics, it's a little hectic over there. Hard to find a park, but still plenty of room to work out and get a good workout in.
Yeah, and I think, didn't you tell, I think you were telling me last week, you got an app to help you find your car in different parking lots, right?
I don't know if that says more about our parking situation or about my memory, but I have been using it, and it does work, at least, you know, because I'm parking in three different parking lots, kind of in and out occasionally throughout the day, and so, I've spent some time, after a couple of weeks ago, spending about 5 minutes walking around out in the parking lot, just completely lost, and not having a clue, and starting to panic, thinking that my truck had been stolen. Then I realized I'd parked in another parking lot. I said I had to do something about this.
Now, did people notice you aimlessly walking around?
I hope they didn't. I tried to be cool about it, but yeah. I'm sure they did. I felt like everybody was watching.
Sure. Of course. Well, good deal. Yeah. It's been pretty busy at the Student Health Center as well. I think, you know, just as far as I think students are wanting to self-diagnose themselves with attention deficit issues, you know, trying to study for finals or anything else, or in a little bit of a panic with that, you know, thinking, why can't I study? And it's like, well, you probably are procrastinating, and that's what it is. But on the nutrition front of things, you've got students who have been interested in trying to get into a new dietary regimen for the summer, taking advantage of that as far as focusing on their own personal health. So it's been kind of neat to see the transition of students going from that focus on spring break to how can I take advantage of the summer.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but just if you know, you may not know the answer to this, but like the end of the spring semester, mm-hmm. do y'all have more people relative to the end of the fall semester?
I would say it's a little hard to predict that. I would say as far as new folks, it's an interesting dynamic because towards the end of the fall, there's that window between Thanksgiving and winter break where maybe a student, you know, went home for the first time during Thanksgiving break and a friend or family member might have mentioned, hey, you gained the freshman 15. What's going on? So then I see a lot of influx at the end of the fall semester, but then it's a different kind of dynamic, but equally the same numbers near the end of the spring semester where students have that motivation to want to see the dietitian before they go home for the summer. So I would say the numbers are comparable, just different motivation.
Right, different reasons. You know, you hear stories about, you know, and I guess a lot of it too is based on exactly what you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. When you start looking at stress-related issues and people just coming in from being sick related to stress, you know, I just out of curiosity, it's just interesting to me, you know, would spring, you know, the end of spring coming up on graduation or you know, that sort of thing, or the end of the fall.
So
just kind of interesting thing to think about.
Most definitely. And you know, I think another dynamic too is you have students that are on the brink of graduation and then they just realize, oh my goodness, there's a dietitian on campus and it's very cost effective. And so at the last minute they're like, let me take advantage of this benefit before I'm not a student anymore. So it's cool to see that dynamic. I think, you know, that's something we can continue to chat about as our show goes on. But you guys, we have got a great show lined up for this afternoon. We have got to take a break though. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Well, Welcome back to Fit to Be Tight with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we want to thank you for coming back and joining us after the break. We mentioned earlier we have a good show lined up, a timely show. And when we're talking about summer activities, usually around here it involves water.
Yes.
And yes. Sheena, I can't wait to hear the story that you have. I will say that I have a story, and it's probably not on a lighter note, and probably not the best way to start. But it shows the seriousness of this topic. To us. When I was growing up, all throughout elementary school, one of my best friends, Danny Marcus, great guy. He was one of those. I wasn't the muscular beast that I am now, and so he would occasionally have to take up for me, which was like once a week. Mm-hmm. And one of my great friends, and fifth or sixth grade, he was playing in a little creek close to the river, and ended up getting swept up in the creek, pulled out into the river, and he drowned.
Oh goodness!
Yeah, and it was one of those experiences for me where it just it still sticks with me,
right,
today,
right.
Obviously. And that's why I think this is such an important topic, water safety, water issues, and that sort of thing. And we're fortunate today to have Brian Sanders with us, who is our aquatics coordinator here on campus at the University of Alabama. And thanks for joining us, man.
Hi, good to be here.
Brian is does a lot of different things around here. Just real briefly, if you don't mind running through like the different bodies of water that you're responsible for.
All right, so we have the Aquatic Center on campus. Has got a 50-meter Olympic-sized pool. It's also got a 25-yard pool. Mm-hmm. And then we have the indoor pool at the Student Rec Center, which is 25 yards. And then in the summertime, typically April to September, Labor Day time of the year, the outdoor pool complex is open. So
right.
we just opened the outdoor pool complex about 2 weeks ago now.
Right, and that becomes a very popular place. From the warmer it gets, the more popular it becomes. Even if it's not, there were some cool days after it first opened, and there were people trying to get in, and I'm like, you have to be cold out there.
Hey, they want that sun, man.
Yeah, I guess
you know,
so.
Even on the days we're closed and there's people out there working, when the gate's halfway down, people try to sneak in. And
oh wow!
Yeah, it's a popular place. It's a very popular place. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, all you have to have is your action card to get in. If you're an active student, if not, you can buy a membership. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place. It's always kicking down there. It's kind of fun to walk down there and just see everything that's going on.
Ryan, as far as your job and responsibilities, tell us a little bit about the nature of your work and even just the size of your staff.
Yeah, so I'm I guess technically the aquatic program manager for University Recreation. I have roughly 60 lifeguards,
okay,
and swim instructors and student supervisors. So my responsibilities mainly are scheduling, training, hiring, and basically developing our staff and making sure they're up to speed with their skills. We have all of our bodies of water throughout campus covered adequately with lifeguards. I'm responsible for all of our swim lessons, our Bama Swim School program, mm-hmm, and ensuring that our swim instructors are trained up and scheduled to teach lessons.
Sure, sure.
Well, when you mention that, Ryan, when you talk about if somebody wanted to become a lifeguard, you mentioned having a staff like that. What does somebody have to do to become a lifeguard if they wanted to get a job like that? First off, do you know how to swim?
Of course.
Okay.
So to be a lifeguard, you have to go through a certification class, and there's different organizations that offer certification classes. Here on campus, we use the American Red Cross lifeguard certification class. So the prerequisites for the course, essentially, you have to be able to swim 300 yards continuously. And then you have to be able to tread water using only your legs for 2 minutes, and then you have to retrieve a 10-pound brick off the bottom of the pool and swim it back. So those are the prereqs to the course. The rest of the course, all the skills are pretty much taught. So the very first day of the course, you would perform the prereqs, and once you pass the prereqs, then you could proceed in the course. And then, like I said, it's just a matter of learning the skills of the drowning, well, the learning the drowning process, how to recognize an emergency situation, activate an emergency action plan, and then perform the water rescue. There's land-based rescues. You learn CPR, first aid, how to recognize spinal injuries, prevent, you know, injury prevention is a big part of lifeguarding. Mm-hmm. So recognizing dangerous behaviors in and around the water. The course is roughly 28 hours. It can typically be done in two weekends or 3 or 4 or 4 or 5 days during a week, you know, with those hours spread out. We offer those classes at the Aquatic Center. We also, you know, when we hire lifeguards, if somebody comes to us and is a good employee, and they pass they go through our hiring process and they interview well and they perform their skills test, you know, we can put them through a lifeguard class and then get them on board with us to work. So,
Ryan, have you noticed with your lifeguard staff, have these students, have they normally previously worked as a lifeguard, say at a, you know, in a municipal facility, or is this something where a lot of the staff, this is something new that they wanted to try since becoming a UA student?
Well, you know, with our campus being so diverse now and people are from all over the country, essentially, mm-hmm. And even international students, you know, I'm finding that there's a lot of people that lifeguard, or have lifeguarded in the past, whether it's during the summertime back home or, you know, when they were in high school. So there's a lot of people that come to campus and they're looking for jobs and they're already certified and we end up hiring them. What's been happening is that people go home in the summer times. And so our staff is severely depleted in the summer. So right now we have several people that are going through our hiring process. That'll be taking our next lifeguarding course. It's in the beginning of May, to become lifeguards, and they have some type of swimming background. Okay. So they, you know, whether they're an international student, they swam, from back home and it was part of their curriculum, or they were on swim team in high school or whatever. They have the ability to pass the prereqs, the lifeguard course, and then become a lifeguard, and then basically start working for us right after.
Okay.
And that's a huge staffing responsibility that you guys have. So many bodies of water and making sure that they're constantly covered. And not only dealing with students, during the summertime, you guys get to deal with families and kids and all that. That sort of
we
thing
do.
Too.
Yeah, we basically, throughout the year, we typically have staff training and service training once a month, mm-hmm. Sometimes more depending on need. But, you know, like I said, lifeguarding is all about preventative lifeguarding, so not having to act. And so the lifeguards spend the vast majority of their time sitting on a lifeguard stand, observe or actively watching the water, and not performing those skills. So when we go and do in-service training, they're performing those skills or practicing emergencies that may occur at any of our pools, and learning our process of following our emergency action plan.
Right. Well, watching some of those, I've seen some of those trainings that you guys do, and it gets intense. It's not just an easy thing that you cruise through an in-service where you know, when we think of in-services,
right,
with our staffs, we think about, you know, talking through things and mm-hmm. education. And I know you guys do that too, but, you know, the physical requirements of that job are difficult, but it has to be a rewarding job. I say rewarding. It has to be a fun job. So, you know, for the most part, especially at the outdoor pool, getting to hang out.
Yeah, a lot of people like the change of pace at the outdoor pool when we finally open. You know, people like to get tans and lifeguard at the same time, yeah. Which is great.
Right.
It's, you know, the outdoor pool really definitely gives everybody a change of pace, our staff, because throughout the school year, they're cooped up in an indoor pool, whether it's at the SRC or the Aquatic Center.
Yeah, man, I would, I'd probably be pretending that I was on Baywatch. Not really, but who knows? Well, we have got, you know, just the rest of the afternoon chatting with Ryan. But again, it is time for a break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're continuing our conversation with Ryan Sanders, who is responsible for pretty much all of the bodies of water on campus. There may be one or two I don't know of that you're responsible for, but for the most part, you're the guy when it comes to water safety. Taking a step back, I know you got a background. You worked in Parks and Rec before you came here to the university. Just in your role, you worked for, as a student, you worked for us as a lifeguard.
I did.
And just throughout all of your experiences lifeguarding, can you tell us about like a close call or any close calls that you've had?
Yeah, I haven't. I've been a lifeguard since I guess I was 16 years old and started in high school and worked at the YMCA in Birmingham. And then when I came to college here, during the summers, I worked for the city of Homewood as a lifeguard and kind of worked my way up. And I was a lifeguard here, then a student supervisor. And I was destined to be an aquatics manager in my future career. So, I've been involved and around some serious injuries we've had. You know, one in particular, I guess, when I was head lifeguard at the city of Homewood, we had an individual had a seizure in the water and went under, and the lifeguards, I wasn't directly responsible for the pool at the time, but I responded on the scene, and the individual went under and they pulled him out of the water, and thankfully EMS was there within minutes because they had a station, fire department had a station right down the road. We didn't get to a point where we were doing CPR or anything like that. But typically, you know, from my experience with, you know, rescues, it's a lot of, kids getting too far or getting out of their comfort zone and slipping off a noodle or, slipping off some kind of floaty and not being able to make their way back to the wall. And so, you know, it's just simple assists, simple rescues where you're, you know, I'm jumping in and bringing somebody back to the wall. I've never had a spinal injury. There's, you know, I have been lifeguarding at times when somebody may, scrape their leg or scrape their head on a diving board. But, you know, in a lot of those situations, and when you're trained to be a lifeguard, you know, you practice to where essentially you're making a perfect rescue because you're in a controlled environment. Well, in the real world, stuff happens and it's not a controlled environment and you don't have any way to, create that controlled environment. So when somebody slips and hits their head or, you know, jumps off a diving board and gets hurt, their instinctive response, if they're conscious and aware of their surroundings, is to swim to the side and get out of the pool. So then you're dealing with a land-based emergency before you can actually ever get to that victim and secure him on a backboard and all that in the water. So, there's been numerous times where, you know, I've been lifeguarding and parents, they may have multiple kids or, take their child for a few seconds and the child kind of just drifts away and then you're just making a simple assist and bringing them back to the wall.
Do you and your staff have much opportunity to educate patrons when it comes to water safety related to the ocean and knowing that people like to flock to the beach whenever it gets warmer? Is there opportunity for patrons to learn from your staff about those types of skills when it comes to swimming in the ocean?
Yeah, so a part of what we do at the aquatic centers, we do have some health and safety courses, and I'm a water safety instructor trainer through the American Red Cross. So there's a lifeguard certification and there's a water safety instructor certification, which essentially certifies individuals to teach different water safety courses, including the Red Cross Learn to Swim program. So within the Red Cross Learn to Swim program, there are certain safety aspects that in our swim lesson program, we try to incorporate and, it may not be specifically beach related, but we talk about flotation devices and using a flotation device that is safe or like a life jacket that's the word escapes me right now, but using sunscreen that's, you know, proper sunscreen applications, or so it's just general water safety type topics that we go over: how to recognize a lifeguard, how to call for help, how to throw a flotation device to somebody that's in need. You know, so within our swim lesson program, each day we try to incorporate one of those safety topics to the kids.
I think that's huge. And, you know, John, I know I teased earlier about having an anecdote for myself, but about 2 years ago on my 30th birthday, my husband and I went to a resort in Mexico to celebrate me turning 30. I figured if I turn 30 in a different country, it doesn't count when we get back to the U.S. And on the actual date of my birthday, we had been swimming in the ocean. And I will disclose that we were not adhering to the orange and red flags on the beach. And, you know, just because we just wanted to take advantage of the water, and we got out a little too far. And, you know, just really remembering, like, having to swim parallel to the shore, you know, getting out of those really hard currents. I mean, that saved my life. So I'm glad that I'd had exposure to that, because right. I just remember, you know, being, I'm sure, cussed at in Spanish whenever we finally made it back to shore by the lifeguard. And so when I think about people who may not have been exposed, I had had some exposure being on a swim team really young and remembering that. But, you know, I just think about people who are always wanting to, you know, push the envelope when it comes to not paying attention to those flags. So could you say, from your professional standpoint, you know, adhere to the flags whenever it comes to ocean safety?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably one thing that the majority of people, you know, whether it's students out on spring break and, you know, when drinking gets involved, they try to do things that are a little bit more risky, and they don't pay attention to flags, red flags. Or being able to recognize when the beach is closed or the water's off limits based on the flags is definitely important.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny. One of the things, and this has nothing to do with your story, Sheena, and I'm not insinuating anything at all, but in preparation for today's show, I was just looking some things up, and one of the things that I came across that I thought was really interesting, I'd never heard it before, but if you when you start talking about mixing alcohol and that sort of thing with swimming, if you have a blood alcohol content of 0.2 or greater at later in the afternoon at night, your ability to discern red from green becomes difficult. And I didn't know that. It makes sense. Obviously, you'd be worried about it in a car, but you talk about the flags too.
It's something to think about. Okay.
Yeah. And just another random thing that I'll throw out that I came across that I thought really, it really kind of blew me away. The majority of people who die in boating accidents, they're going to die from drowning, more than likely. But the number that they throw out is that approximately 1/4 of those people have a blood alcohol content of 0.2 or greater. So it goes to show, you know, when you mix the two, alcohol and water. I know oil and water don't mix, but perhaps alcohol and water don't mix either. You know, I just thought that was interesting. I mean, we always know you know, increases the risk when people are drinking and trying to swim. But I mean, those are high numbers.
Yeah. And do you think, Ryan, too, there's probably some misconception or you run into issues with people that are chronically dehydrated when they are in the water because they think, oh, I'm in the water, you know, why do I need to physically drink water, you know, all that kind
of
stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot of times where we have individuals that are really high-level athletes, and they try to get in the water and swim, or they think they can pass a lifeguard class. And, you know, 300 yards is not that far. But when you're not used to swimming that distance, your body gets really tired very quickly.
Right.
And so it's just different from running, and people a lot of times don't understand that. And, yeah, if you have been drinking and you are dehydrated and you try to get out in the water and do something that you wouldn't normally do, you're going to definitely tire out a lot quicker and become dehydrated or start cramping up or whatever.
Man, we're having some good conversation this afternoon, you guys. Again, if you've just joined us, we've been talking with Ryan Sanders from the UA Aquatic Center, but it is once again time for a break. We hope you stick with us this afternoon. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we're back here with our last segment with Ryan Sanders from University Recreation and specifically the Aquatic Center, our aquatics expert here on the campus of the University of Alabama. And I have a few questions that I want to ask you. I just came up with these. I think there are, you know, there are obviously people that need to be to get water safe. For lack of a better word, I'll use air quotes there. But with what I see as categories, me personally, as people, you might categorize them other ways. But you know, people that may need help. What are for those people who can't swim, and they don't even want to learn. What would you say to somebody like that?
You know, I would. My grandmother can't swim, and I know people that can't. I've tried to encourage, you know, when people come to me for swim lessons, private swim lessons, and they're an adult and they've spent 30 or 40 years of their life being a non-swimmer, you try to encourage those people, and at a minimum, educate them on dangers of getting in water. You know, I mean, so if you're a non-swimmer, you definitely don't go and get in water that you're unfamiliar with. Dark water, being in a lake, river, somewhere like that, you don't want them to get in there by themselves. And using a Coast Guard approved life jacket if they're going to be on a boat or somewhere around water where they could potentially slip and fall and hit their head and drown or slip off in the water and not know how to get back to the surface or get back and save themselves. So, encouraging them is probably first and foremost, and then educating them on just some dangers of water and just general water safety. Wearing life jackets is very helpful for non-swimmers.
Right. I have several other categories here, but for the sake of time, because you kind of ran into my second category there with those who can't swim but want to learn enough to save themselves in the event of an emergency. I think everybody should at least want to know that. You know, if I happen to fall off into a bathtub that's too deep, I want to know how to get out. You know, I want to be able to get out, safely. So I think, you know, those first two categories run close together for me, but this third category is probably one that you'd want to, you know, with all the children that are around the pool during the summer at the rec center that you see. What about those people who can't swim but either have kids or plan to have kids and they want to or need to be able to save them in the event of that? Or, you know, just water safety for parents around, with kids, you know, in the pool.
Yeah, and we do different. We do general water safety and home pool safety courses for. Typically, it's for DHR foster parents, you know, and it's a requirement when they have a body of water that's around their house and they're going to be fostering children, they have to take a general pool safety, home pool safety type course, and in that course, it basically talks about general pool safety and what to have around your pool, to have a reaching pole. Mm-hmm. If you're a non-swimmer and you happen to have a pool around your house or in your neighborhood, if you have a reaching pole or something to where you can reach somebody that's into distress in the water without having to get in and compromise yourself or having a ring buoy that you can throw out to somebody and assist them and pull them into the side. If you're at a lake and you're a non-swimmer or you're not a very strong swimmer or even in the ocean, it's all about being resourceful and finding stuff that can assist you to save somebody's life, whether it's a cooler or, you know, a seat in a boat or, a reaching pole or, something to where you can save somebody's life without putting yourself in jeopardy and getting in the water. We try to preach to parents and swim lessons, you know, and not just taking one session of swim lessons, continuous swim lessons throughout the year to keep skills fresh. And, you know, cause children throughout the winter typically don't swim. And so they lose those skills. And, you know, the rec does offer swim lessons year round, but most other organizations do too throughout right. the winter. It's just not at the forefront of people's minds in the mm-hmm. wintertime and in the fall and the spring with other sports. So being able to take swim lessons year round and having those skills fresh on those children's minds when they come and start swimming in the summertime. You know, a lot of people, especially in the South, they only swim in the summer. Right. And so they do lose a lot of those skills. And you know, encouraging parents, encouraging the kids when kids come to the pool and they're non-swimmers, you know, not just using water wings, use a Coast Guard approved life jacket or a puddle jumper, which I do believe is Coast Guard approved, but using something that's going to hold their head above water if they get into water that's over their head, or if they slip and they hit their head, you know, a puddle jumper typically is going to hold a child's head up above water mm-hmm. and ensure that they're not going to drown.
Right.
I've heard you mention, you know, Coast Guard approved life jacket. Is there something that people need to look for whenever they're buying life jackets in retail facilities, or is it bad to make the assumption that all life jackets are Coast Guard approved?
There's typically on the it's a stamp or some kind of seal that says mm-hmm. Coast Guard approved.
Okay.
So it's there's different levels of flotation devices. You know, your basic orange old school life mm-hmm. jacket that you see like with the flat bottom boat or that yeah. you're going to rent in a lake, that's a Coast Guard approved life jacket. Okay. It's just a different level of Coast Guard approved life jacket. And then I'm almost certain that the puddle jumpers are Coast Guard approved, and they're for like toddlers, and they're just more effective than water wings. When you okay. grease a child up with sunscreen and lotion and put water wings on their arms
right.
and then they jump in the water and they put their arms over their head, the water wings are going to fall off.
I never so. Thought so, about
something
that.
You never, yeah, yeah. It's never crossed my mind before.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So, but typically, you know, in an outdoor pools, you know, or at any pool, if you have a non-swimmer, even if they're in, you know, a flotation device or they have a noodle or whatever, you know, we preach and one of our policies at the outdoor pool is that children must stay within arm's reach of their parent. So if a child's in the pool and the parent's, you know, laying out, something still could happen to that child. So we see a lot of non-swimmers out by themselves in the pool, and we try to get the parents to be right there on the edge and the child's within arm's reach. So if something does happen, the parents can respond before a lifeguard has to intervene. And so that's probably our biggest issue in the summertime mm-hmm. is having, parents use the lifeguards as babysitters.
Right.
And, yes. you know, and the lifeguards are responsible for the whole pool and not just one particular child. So there's a lot of that that goes on in the summertime where you have multiple children with one parent, and one parent's sometimes not able to watch all of them effectively. So just being aware of where your children is and or where your children are and you know, their swimming ability and educating them on what to do if something happens or an emergency situation comes up.
Right. Go ahead, Sheena, I'm sorry.
This is not a serious question, but just, you know, knowing that we're ending our time with Ryan and in just a minute or so, I don't know if either of you have seen the movie The Sandlot, a very, you know, great cult classic, but have you ever had any young kids, specifically boys, fake a drowning accident to get kissed by a beautiful lifeguard? I'm just thinking about pool safety.
I can't believe you just asked that.
Well,
it's a legit question.
It
Go
is
ahead.
A legit question.
Yeah, I mean, it is legit, but I have not ever seen that.
Okay,
you know,
that's good.
If people typically, if they are faking a drowning, you know, mm-hmm. the lifeguards kind of yeah. get upset because, you know, it's pretty serious. And,
right.
And you know, it was funny in The Sandlot. But and when I was younger, you know, we watched The Sandlot and it definitely crossed our minds. But you know, I've never seen that happen.
Hey, I just I had to bring that up to say that water safety is no joke. I mean, it might be in the movies, but it's not in real life.
That is the best question that we
Thank
have
you.
Had
I
in
told
a long
you.
Time.
Yeah.
Great. Good deal. Well, looking at all the number of kids that we have at the pool, one of the things that I came across was it only takes about 20 seconds on average for a child to drown. So we talk about water safety, right. You know, it's just such a big deal. But Ryan, we want to thank you for being here with us this afternoon and providing us with this information. It's really important stuff this time of year.
Yeah, thank you.
Most definitely. Well, we are wrapping it up, you guys, but you've got us for one more little segment. But of course, it's time for a break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we want to thank you for joining us this Sunday afternoon. I just had a great conversation with Ryan Sanders from the Aquatic Center and talking about water safety and just timely issue, summer coming up, that sort of thing. Sheena, I occasionally we'll throw out the quiz thing, and I have a few quiz questions for you just to see how close you could get to these things I came across.
Okay.
You ready for this?
I'm ready for the challenge.
Okay. But one thing that a number that kind of shocked me is there are about 4,000 people per year in the United States that drown. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think if a person is a male or a female, they're more likely to drown?
Oh, goodness.
It's not even close.
Really?
The ratio. Yes.
I want to assume females are the higher number. Am I?
And you would be wrong.
Really?
Just like on just about all of our quizzes.
Man,
you start off wrong.
I start off so confident, yet I'm always wrong.
There's about a 5-to-1 ratio. Males are, wow. are 5 times more likely than
okay.
females to drown. And the reason behind that is, and this, I can't believe you didn't think about this part. Women have a greater layer of subcutaneous fat, so they're more likely to float.
Oh.
It came to me naturally, being so low in body fat.
Yeah.
I sink like a rock. And then women are not as likely to take chances like guys are. We get the testosterone and do things going on.
That would have been the only thing that would have made me think males, them being so confident that they could just conquer anything, including a body of water. But
right.
All right. That was a good education moment.
Yep. obviously, this would be an obvious answer, but the primary form of accidental death for children under age one is drowning, which is kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think all the other things that could happen
right.
to a child under age one. But what percentage of drownings in the United States are children that are age 4 or less? If you had to take a guess.
I would say 25%.
It's actually less. It's
okay.
It's 10%,
okay.
which is
okay.
good.
Okay.
So we have some parents that are actually paying attention.
Well, good.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Like Ryan was talking about.
No, I actually remember my mom told me I'm fairly certain that my mother also cannot swim, but she did tell me of a time that she noticed I was in a baby in a little flotation device and it had flipped over. So I was like upside down and my little legs were there and nobody else was like paying attention. So she jumps in. Thankfully it was in the shallow end.
Uh-huh.
So she didn't actually have to swim, but
wow.
That was, yeah. So that was her golden moment saving me. Thankfully it was on the shallow end. So,
okay, last question for you here. How far from safety do most drownings occur, do you think? About how many feet from safety is somebody?
About 10.
That is spot on.
Really?
Out of all, yeah, that is a perfect number. 10 feet or less. What I have here is that and it, you don't think about it this way, but most drowning victims don't swim into danger.
Mm-hmm.
They fall from a dock or a boat. So
really?
It's those
okay.
people, like we were talking about earlier, that might, you know, not be prepared, don't know how to swim.
Right.
And fall into something. And
okay.
And
I thought it was the people like me with my story where I was
yeah.
intentionally going further and further out.
Yeah.
Okay.
You would fall yeah. into some percentage,
yeah.
I'm sure. But anyway, it is. I don't think we have time for any more questions. I do have some good trivia questions for you.
Now, John, I think you were mentioning before, you have a body of water at home, correct?
Yeah, I do. I do put a pool in my backyard, okay. And I absolutely love it. It's one of the best things, one of the best investments I've ever made.
No wonder, I always make comments about how tan you are, and I never decide if it's with you going to ball games or you being out at the pool. But
a combination of both, yeah.
Okay, getting that vitamin D.
Yeah, but my pool is only 6 feet deep at the deepest end. I got it just so I could just jump in and get wet and cool off and that sort of thing.
Well, so the last time I went to visit my parents in Fort Payne, Alabama, my mother has turned their swimming pool into a massive goldfish pond. Now, it's very stylish, so you can tell her disdain for never wanting a pool since she can't swim, and now that my brother and I are too old to live at home. But anyways, if I stay on the air, I'll continue to digress. But you've been listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John this afternoon. We hope you have a great week, and we will catch you next week.